Today I'd like to talk a little bit about the concept of Ruba de Issa Kaman and Ruba de Lesa Kaman and the differences between them. The Gemara in Chulin and Dafir Aleph Mer Aleph, one of the major places in Shas, tells us about Rove. So the Gemara asks, how exactly do we know that we follow a Rove? And the Gemara says, what do you mean? How do we know? It's the Pasuk of the Torah. The Pasuk says that for Rabim Lahatos. So to that, the Gemara says, well, no, maybe that only tells us about the Ruba de Issa Kaman. But the Ruba de Lesa Kaman, maybe we wouldn't know. And the Gemara has a long discussion. How do we prove that Ruba de Lesa Kaman is also something that we follow? Now, these two phrases, Ruba de Issa Kaman and Ruba de Lesa Kaman, are a little bit mysterious. It's not really explained what exactly those phrases mean, although the Gemara there does give an example of each. So the Gemara says, are we talking about the Ruba de Issa Kaman, which is something like the famous situation of 9 stores? You have 10 stores and you find some meat that came from one of the stores, and 9 of the stores sell kosher food and one of them doesn't, so you have the right to assume, Basar Rov, that the meat came from one of the kosher stores. So that's one of the types of Rov. And Sanhedrin is counted within that category as well. The fact that in the context of the Beis Din and the context of Sanhedrin, you follow the majority of the judges. So those are examples of Ruba de Issa Kaman. But the Ruba de Lesa Kaman is, for example, as Gemara says, Katan Uktana. And as Rashi fills us in, we're talking about there, about Katan Uktana, that we allow a Katan Uktana to perform Yibum, even though it's possible that the people involved may be a Sris, and in which case there wouldn't really be a Kiyum of Yibum, so maybe the whole act would be enacted in Averu without the mitzvah of Yibum. So we don't worry that maybe a person is a Sris if we don't know. We say that Rove Ketanim in this case, are not in that category. So that type of Rov is apparently a Ruba de Lesa Kaman. So we know from the Gemara these examples. We have an example of Ruba de Issa Kaman, stores or Sanhedrin, and Ruba de Lesa Kaman. We can assume most people aren't Svissim. But as far as the definition, that we don't really have. So we have to figure out exactly what this terminology means. That's one thing we want to figure out. And then we want to figure out what exactly is the interaction between the two, or at least get some insight into the interaction between the two. We have, again, a couple of vague indications. First of all, the fact that the Gemara seems to assume they need 2 separate makaros. Right? The Acher Rabim Lahatos, that was good enough for Ruba de Issa Kaman. Ruba de Lesa Kaman, we're going to need a different makor. And the Gemara goes through a bunch of possible makoros, and the fact that we don't assume every shechita is an avela, because maybe there was... every shechit of the treifa, maybe there was some type of a wound in the place that the cut was made. How do we know that's not the case? So we were so much on a roll for that. The fact that we would execute somebody for striking his father, even though we only know that the father is the father because of the rov bilasafar abal, things like that, the Gemara cites. So the assumption seems to be that we need another mucker for a rov when it's talking about Ruba de Lesa Kaman. So we already have that indication that we're dealing with 2 substantively different categories. And there seems to be indications, and this is something we have to try to clarify a little more, there seems to be indications that Ruba de Issa Kaman is stronger, is more effective. There seems to be a mandamer in the Gemara, in this discussion in the Gemara in Bechoris, and Dafi Tesim Beis, and Yivamas Kofi Tesim Aleph, seems to be a mandamer in the, Havamin in the Gemara, that the Rabbanan who follow Rov, we know we're familiar that there's a famous machlokas between Rabbanan and Reb Meir. The Reb Meir is Chayish Lemiyat. The Meir takes into account the Miyat against the Rov. So there seems to be a possibility in the Gemara that the Rabbanan would agree with Reb Meir in the situation of Ruba de Lesa Kaman. And in Rishonim we also find the other way, that Reb Meir agrees with Rabbanan that he's not Chayish Lemiyat in a Ruba de Lesa Kaman. So there seem to be indications that a Ruba de Issa Kaman is stronger than a Ruba de Lesa Kaman. So all of that goes into the mix. We have to try to figure out what exactly these terms mean. So that's basically really the crux of our mission tonight, just to figure out what these phrases are, see some of the different theories about one. Hi. Why is there an extra step involved? based on... Well, I don't know if it's necessarily always the case. I don't know if you'll find that that distinction always is always there. Like maybe an example that we that Gemara gave. But I don't know if that's always gonna. I don't know if that's always gonna hold true. But listen to some of the definitions and see if it can still hold true. I'm not sure if it does. It's worth a thought. See how it fits in with some of the things that we'll talk about. Okay, so first of all, right on the surface, the partial way to try to interpret these phrases the way they sound like. Issa kaman, lessa kaman. So it sounds like you could say that issa kaman means it's in front of you. That's what the words mean, right? It's in front of you. So if you see the numbers in front of you, you see the statistics in front of you, so that's an issa kaman. If it's that kind of a row, if I can see, okay, here's the mall, there are 10 stores, 9 of them are kosher. Okay, so that's ruba de issa kaman. The row is in front of me, and the meat is in front of me. That's a ruba de issa kaman. While a more vague type of row that's not in front of your eyes, that has to do with a world type of statistic, where you don't really have access to the numbers, so one maybe could suggest that that's the difference. That when I have the numbers in front of me, I know it is 90%, it is 82% row, so that's an issa kaman. And when it's more just, I have a sense that there's a majority in the world like this, but I don't really have the numbers or the facts in front of me, so that's a lessa kaman. That is the suggestion that you find in the Sefer Amudei Or, and perhaps in some other sources, but in the later Achronim, that's not really the popular way to see it. Right? That might be true. Although most of these cases wouldn't really be possible. And we're talking about a Herculean task to really ascertain the exact numbers in some of these... in theory, right. Everything in general, we're talking about Sfeikis and Roves, we're always talking about things that are hidden from you but are established somewhere. So that doesn't necessarily... The fact that we could maybe ascertain what the numbers are doesn't really change it. But the question is it ever really going to be feasible, especially when we're talking about the possibility, for example, possibility of trafis, the possibility of an inner defect. People don't even know themselves. You have to give everyone in the world an x-ray.
Well, after
a year, you know, the world will go from that. Right, so then you can throw in a chazaka, but that's also using another mechanism. It'll be a complex process. So to mention one gateway shita before we get to some of the other shitas, one perhaps bridge shita. So Bochanan, in his Kovei Shiurim to Bava Basra, Mos Pei Gimel, so he mentions this possibility that we just mentioned, that one could say that's what the words mean, Issa Kaman's in front of you, Issa Kaman's not in front of you. But then he suggested that maybe that's not the only way to say it, and that maybe we could say it a little bit differently, that Aruba to Issa Kaman, the rove comes from knowing the different pratim that are involved, knowing the details, each one independently. And rubo de lessa kaman comes from not looking at the prat, not looking at any prat specifically, but looking at a klal. And then in general, things like this. And then working from within the klal to try to figure out what the different pratim are. So that's kind of like a version of a theory that you find in a number of other svarim as well. So that, to move to that, what you find some other svarim. So, there is a Shmaisa and a Tshuva of the Nesivis. It's printed in the Chen Shlomo. And the Chassam Sofer, that all seem to be going along the same path. But it could be there are some differences, and those differences might make a difference. And there's an essay about this in the Sefer Pri Moshe, which we'll make reference to. And this is similar a little bit to Bochanan, but takes it a little bit differently. The Shmaisa and Shmaisa Beis and Parak Tezvav, again, this is the author of the Ktos HaChoshen, his earliest work, the Shmaisa, Sheik Shmaisa. So the Shmaisa suggests that Issa Kaman, there's no Svara for an Issa Kaman. Issa Kaman is to say that... this meat is kosher. There's no svara that it should be kosher. You only have numbers telling you that it should be kosher. And it's a situation of kol de parish meruba parish. That's basically the principle that is being put into play. Now, meruba de issa kaman is an expression of the idea of kol de parish meruba parish. Everything that has been separated, we have a right to assume it was separated from the rov. So when something is separated from the road, we can apply this principle, that's Ruba D'Issa Kaman. And Ruba D'Lessa Kaman is not about looking at something that was separated from a road, but rather it's about applying a Svara. That if there's some logic to say that, yeah, this is usually the case, it's not based on looking at how this was removed from some larger set, but it's that things are generally happening this way, some type of a Svara to say this should be the case, so that seems to be the distinction between Issa Kaman and Lessa Kaman in the eyes of the Shmaisim. The thing which is parish, we have to know what is it. So we can assume it is the robe. It's from the robe. It was separated from something. Right? We don't know what it was separated from. So we have a right to assume it was separated from the robe. I found this piece of meat. This piece of meat was separated from some meat store. Well, it is the robe. It's considered to be part of the robe. It could have either come from the robe or from the meat. It came from something within that 100% group. So we have the right to assume it came from the 90%. While we're talking about a lesser command, we're not looking at anything that was removed from a larger group. Where it's not like we have a group of, one of the most cows on treifus, for example. So we're not like we're looking at a group of cows and there was a mixture of treifus and non-treifus, and this was removed from that group, so we can assume it was one of those. No, we look at a cow and we have an assumption cows in general are not treifus. But once in a while, cows are treifus. So Acher Rabba Mahatos, it seems like from the Gemara, is only talking about Ruba D'Issa Kaman. That you have the right to, although the Maskan of the Gemara one could question a little bit, but it sounds like from the Gemara that Acher Rabba Mahatos is just telling you that when you have something that's parish,
why is that parish?
Something that you found a piece of meat, and it used to be in a store, now it's not in the store, it's in the courtyard somewhere. Mm-hmm. So that's like a good question, how exactly, even within those two robes, it might be what to distinguish. Maybe we'll get to that. That actually may impact more in next week's discussion. It's a little complicated. We'll come back to it, though. If not tonight, we'll come back to it next week. So the question of how Rove relates to Chazaka, and is one type of Rove closer to Chazaka than another, is also a complex question, which maybe we'll get to. For the most part, Rove and Chazaka are considered to be two different topics. That's what the Gemara says, that the Gemara seems to view them as two separate things, but it could be that there's a distinction to be made between Issa Kaman and Lessa Kaman. We'll see, it may be dependent on which definition you use. Now, the Nesivis has a tshuva which is printed in the Sefer Chaim de Shlomo, in Eben Ezer and Semen Chav Dalet. And this sounds like it could be in sync with the Shmaisa, but it could be, as we'll discuss, it could be there are some key differences. That the idea of Ruba D'Lessa Kaman, start with that, is when we you can really stick with the words here again, Issa Kaman, Lessa Kaman, in front of us, not in front of us. What the terms mean is that Issa Kaman means it's in front of us as part of our cheshbon. And Lessa Kaman means it's not part of our halakhic consideration. Because a Ruba D'Issa Kaman, the problem is caused by the fact that there are other animals in the world, or there are other aspects in the world, whatever we're talking about. So for example, if I have a piece of meat, why am I misupik about this piece of meat? Because there exists non-kosher pieces of meat. And the number of non-kosher pieces of meat causes me a safek, until if I can figure out that the number of kosher pieces of meat is more than the number of non-kosher pieces of meat, that's going to help me deal with my safek. But what created my suffix? The presence of other things. Like the fact that there were other ingredients in the story, that's what caused me an issue. So I have to look at the whole picture, I have to count in all the different things that could be relevant, and count them up, and that's the Ruba D'Issa Kaman. So again, it also is building on the word. D'Issa Kaman means what's in front of us, all the elements are in front of us. And on our piece of paper as we calculate the number. While Lessa Kaman, if I want to know, is this cow a treifa, for example? Is this child a sris? So it's nothing to do with the existence of any, whether there's, if he was the only kid in the world or if there were a million kids in the world, I'd have the same question. Because it's all based on this one person. Is he a sris or not? And it's not affected at all by the presence of other people or other animals, whatever the situation is. It's not affected at all by the presence of the other elements in the world. So those other elements are not really part of my cheshbon. I just want to know that the possibility, since the possibility of treifas or the possibility of sris exists, so how much do I have to worry about this person having that or this animal having that issue? So the other ingredients are not really part of it. So lesa kaman means that all the other elements in the world don't really affect the question, and I'd have the same question if this was the only ingredient in the world. So that's how the Siva seems to relate to it. Yeah, that's basically another way of saying it. So basically, if I'm counting up parts, that'll be Issa Kaman. And if I'm not counting up parts, but I'm basically looking at one aspect, so that's Lesa Kaman. And the Chasam Sofer in his Chidushim to the Vavasra and Dav Chav Dalet says a very similar thing. He just also throws in an interesting word, which may make a difference in some contexts, that he also says that something that's Minika Olam, that's the way things go, that's also part of Lesa Kaman. So the question of how minig can affect things might be an interesting one, might play a role in some discussions. So the fact that Chasam Sofer throws that word in, so that's an interesting thing to keep in mind. So we'll come back in a few minutes to the differences between some of these gedarim. But then the question seems to be, so why would we then say that Issa Kaman is better? Really, Lesa Kaman should seem to be better. Lesa Kaman has a svara to say that it's true, while really Issa Kaman has no svara. If I find a piece of meat, so, okay, 9 out of 10 stores are kosher, but it's still very possibly true that this is non-kosher. 10% of the stores are non-kosher. So it's still very possibly true this is not kosher. There's no svara telling me this is kosher. Svara would say that I should be worried that it's not kosher. So I could have said that Lesa Kaman really should be strong. So the point could be that maybe it's not really a question of one or the other being better, even though some sources seem to indicate that it is. But maybe this is the way the Primosha understands it, that really we're just talking about two separate categories. There are two different mechanisms here. That Issa Kaman means that you have the right to assume that something was separated from the rove, the right to assume it was parished from the rove. And Lesa Kaman is a mechanism of birur, it's a mechanism of ascertaining the facts, which tells you that this is the same as whatever the rove is. Not that it was separated from the rove, but that it is the same as what the rove is. And therefore, to say that you follow such a rove, it's a completely different mechanism than kol deparish mi deparish. And therefore, it's understandable that we need a different source for it. We'll probably have to say which part. Issa Kaman, if something was separated from a group, and we want to know which group it was separated from. So the din of Issa Kaman tells us that we have a right to assume it was separated from that group. Why do you have that right? Because Lesa Kaman, we're not dealing with anything that was separated from any group. It's not. It's the fact that we assume that it's there. Like, for example, give me an example like this. Like, let's say, so when I teach in the high school in the afternoon, so let's say 20 kids in the room, 16 of them are from TNET. Right, so let's say I were to run into a kid on the street the night before a test. I want to know, is he from TNEC, and did he study for the test? So, maybe he's from TNEC. That would be a Ruba de Issa Kaman, because 16 out of 20 kids are from TNEC. But the truth is, there's no real svara to say he's from TNEC. It's still entirely possible he's not, because four of the kids aren't. Right? So to say there's svara that he's from TNEC is really not true. But on the other hand, now let's look at the question of, did he study? So it's a serious class. Good, great. You could say that there's a Ruba de Issa Kaman that most guys in this year study well for the tests. So that's basically the two different types of rove that we'll be talking about here. So the first, to assume that he's one part of the TNEC group, that's one type of din. And that's to say that, okay, he was part of one group or the other. I had the right to assume he was part of the larger group, even though there's no svara to say like that. While to say that he studied, that is a spur to say that he probably did, even though he might not have. Right? So it's not something I know absolutely true. So in a sense, it's a rove as well. But it's a rove that doesn't come from adding up the numbers. And in theory, I don't see this explicitly discussed anywhere, but I guess in theory it could really come out that a Rubu Delessa Kaman could actually come out to be the minority if you added up the numbers. Although I don't see that discussed so much, but I think in theory it should be possible. But it's based on some type of a svar. It makes sense that that's the type of guys in this year, all people who study, so therefore I meet a guy, I wonder if he studied, he probably did. So Rabbi Akiva Eger and his Chuvis in Kuf Mem Aleph. Sorry. His Chuvis in Simen Kuf Vav. Rabbi Akiva Eger and his Chuvis in Simen Kuf Vav writes to Yesod that Issa Kaman, in a situation of Issa Kaman, the Miyut is considered to be not there at all. And therefore, if I want to set up the other side, sometimes we take the Miyut into account. Or sometimes we add up different elements for different purposes, if you want to combine it with a chazaka or something like that. So Rabbi Akiva Eger writes that in a Rubu de Issa Kaman, the Miyut is as if it's not there at all. You can't use that for anything. You can't use that to combine it with anything else. What's not the case for the Lesser Kaman. Lesser Kaman, you can take into account the Miyut. So the Primosh, again, in his discussion, so he explains that he thinks he can explain this based on a comment Joseph Engel has in the Sefer Beis HaOser, that when you have an Issa Kaman, a Rubu de Issa Kaman, again, the whole suffix was generated because of the Miyut. Because there are elements in the world that don't fit into this group, that's why we're worried, because there's non-kosher meat in the world, so that's why we have a suffix. So, therefore, if that's the case, so what's the chiddush of Holchem Achar Rov? The chiddush in this case, of this command of Holchem Achar Rov, is that you have the right to ignore the miyut. That's what the rule is telling us. But when it comes to a lesser command, so lesser command, every single component has the suffix. And it's not because of other things that are in the world. So therefore, you have to always kind of take into consideration the fact that it could be something else. And so the chiddush is that you don't have to, you have the right to assume it's not something else. So if that's the case, then we have always inherently the element that it might be something else. So that's something you can use to join together with a different percentage. But when it comes to an Issa Kaman, so by definition, the whole concept means you ignore the other aspect. You ignore the other things in the world that mess up your rove. So therefore, since that's another indication that the mechanisms of Issa Kaman and Lassa Kaman are different, and that's why one would say when it comes to Issa Kaman, you can't even count the minority for anything, while Lassa Kaman, you can. Right? Could. Well, that depends here. There are positions in Rishonim like that.
Not
everybody holds like that. And there's a Havmi and the Gemara the other way, that even Rabbanan agree to Reb Meir when it comes to the Lesser Kaman. Sorry?
Wouldn't this also be a good part of the bigger issue of the entire idea of whatever would it be, Holkan, the Bible, something Holkan, if I wrote?
Mm-hmm. Of Safik Asman Akara. Right, so that is related also. So how did that actually, it's a good segue, because I was about to mention that. So how exactly does it relate to Bittul Barov? So that's actually, there are a couple of essays about this in the Sefer Chidushim Rav Meir Simcha, the Chidushim that were printed from the Yor Sameach on Shas. So in two places, in Chulon and Daf Tzadi Vav Min Aleph, and in Sanhedrin and Daf Tzadik Tes Min Aleph. So in two places, so Rav Meir Simcha explains, and you have to figure out how this fits into some of the different theories. Yes, and Hedrin Sadi Samach Tesman Aleph, 69a. So you have to figure out how this fits into the different definitions. So Rav Meir Simcha explains how exactly, what's the reason that we have an adifus for Rubud Issa Kaman? Because basically what happens is that it works off the principle of Bittul Barov. That all the meat, for example, that could be removed from those different stores, we see that as if it's all one big pile. And therefore, this pile, this kind of theoretical pile, is made up of 90% kosher and 10% treif. So the 90% kosher is mevatel the treif, and therefore this, which comes out of that group, whatever element of treifus there is, has been bottled. While in lesser command, you don't have that type of mechanism. You don't have any type of clash like that going on. So Rav Meir Simcha's word is consistent with this this idea that the Primosha was suggesting, that basically that's why there is this strength to this Kaman, that because of Bittul, like you bring in, Bittul is basically what's going on, and that the world cancels it out. Which could also then be relevant to the Sanhedrin model, that it could be that's what's going on. When we talk about the Sanhedrin model, when you have two judges, let's say a Bezdin of three, and you have two saying one thing, and the other one saying another thing. So again, it could be that those two turn the third one into their opinion. Which, but that's something we'll get more into Be'ez Hashem next week when we talk about Mammonus and the Fascists. It could mean that, yeah. No, it could mean that it becomes Mutter or becomes the status of the... Yeah. Well, that there's a lot of other indications. But he, Rav Meir Simcha's Chiddush, is applying this concept of Bittul Barov to Ruba Dissa Kaman, telling us that that's in general how Ruba Dissa Kaman works. And when you look at the Beis Din, so it's, that idea is more there in front of you. But he's telling you to look at the meat that way also. When you look at the meat, you see it as part of this hypothetical group of all the meat from all the stores in one big box. And the kosher meat being mevatel, the non-kosher meat, and therefore this meat, whatever it is, now has a status of kosher because it's because of the process of Bittul. Now, we mentioned before that the Shmais and the Nesivah seem to be working under a mostly similar rubric, but the Primosha points out that there could be some slight differences, because the Shmais really focuses on Prisha as being the key element, that something was separated from the Rove. That seems to be the operative component. If you're dealing with Kol Deparish, then you're talking about Rubat Issa Kaman. While if you're not involving any Prisha, then you're talking about Lassa Kaman. While the Nesivus focuses more on the question of whether you're counting up ingredients or not. So that difference may make a difference in some cases. For example, the issue of Sveik Sveika. So when it comes to Sveik Sveika, the Sveik Sveika, we know we normally assume that Sveik Sveika, we don't have to worry about the other element, the element that comes out on the other side. For example, you have a Sveik Sveika to be Mekel, so then we're allowed to be Mekel. So it's a question, there's a different positions in Rishonim, how that works. So this, we'll focus, for example, on the position espoused by the Rashba, that this seems to be some type of a rove. Rashba writes, maybe better than a rove. So one could say, working with the Rashba, that Sveik Sveika operates on a rove basis, that basically, let's assume that a Sofik is basically a 50% chance of something. So if you have two Sveikas working off each other, and you have to get past two Sveikas in order to get to a certain conclusion, so then you have 75% working against you and not 50%. And therefore, the 75% chance is not true, so you don't have to worry about the other possibility. So if that's the mechanism, so then basically it's a function of rove. The question is, what type of rove is it? So the Nesivus suggests that it's Ruba Deissa Kaman, because it's the Netziv L'Shitaso, right, that what's an Issa Kaman if you're counting up the parts? So here you're counting up the Tzadim, right? So since you have basically three out of four Tzadim to be Mekel, so out of the four different possibilities, three of them lead you to be Mekel, so then it's an Issa Kaman. While if you're dealing with a Shmaisa kind of view, so then that might still be a Lesa Kaman, because we're not talking about called the Parish here. That's not necessarily involved at all. We could be talking about some type of localized halachic question, which doesn't necessarily involve any called the Parish situation. So it could be that would be viewed as a Ruba de Lesa Kaman, and that's the way the Achiezer sees it, as a Ruba de Lesa Kaman. It's in Chelek Beis and Simon Vav. In Osu Gimel, the Achiezer writes that the robe of Sveik Sveik is Ruba de Lesa Kaman, so it could be that that might be a distinction between the Nesivus and the Shmaisa, that if you're adding up the parts, so then you're going to call it Issa Kaman like the Nesivus, but if you're going based on whether it's a situation of Parish or not, so then perhaps that would lead you to call this a Lesa Kaman. This could also affect another din, and that is the din of Kavua, which is a little bit of a mysterious concept also. It's also a very complicated topic, but it's very vaguely speaking. So the Gemara says that Kol Kavua Kamech Sametz Adami. If something is established in its place, and again, whatever that means, we'll be satisfied with a vague translation for now. So then, we don't apply rules of Rove when we say it's considered to be like it's 50-50. It's the Metzah, Metzah done. So, the Rove that we're not dealing with, the Rove that we're not taking into account, is that an Issa Kamana or a Lassa Kamana? In other words, see, that seems too hypothetical to make a difference. But, the flip side of the question is, when we say we don't follow Rove in a situation of Kavua, do we mean that we only are not following a Ruba de Issa Kaman? Or maybe a Lesa Kaman is also not counted? It's assuming less is different. Yeah. And that seems to be a Machlokas Afronim, the Prima Godim, and the Chavis Das, say that even when it comes to Lesa Kaman, so Kavu, if the situation is Kavu, it doesn't help. While Rabbi Kiva Eger in his Chuvis and Tinyan and Kuv Gimel, holds that if we're dealing with a lesser kaman, then a lesser kaman we follow, even if it's a situation of kavua. So, as again the Primosha points out, that could depend on really how we're defining it to come on a lesser kaman, because this goes to the question of what does kavua mean. Because if you say like the Shmaisa that it's all based on parish, so kavua by definition is not parish; it's in its place. So, Kavua is the opposite of Issa Kaman, according to the Shmaisa. So therefore, if you're going to tell me that Kavua doesn't work, it's got to be that it doesn't work for Issa Kaman. Because the whole situation is by definition not Issa Kaman. Because it's the opposite. Issa Kaman means parish, and Kavua means not parish. It's in its place.
It doesn't work.
We don't take into account the rove in that situation. No matter what the numbers are, if the miyut is kavua, no, we know that we're not that the chiddush of kavua is not talking about issa kaman. It's talking about lesa kaman, because it itself is not a situation of issa kaman.
Because it.
Well, according to Shmaisa, the situation wouldn't come up because kavua means lesa kaman. Right. But if you believe like the Nesivis, so then it could be that Kavua might still be a situation of Issa Kaman. So therefore it could be that Kavua only rules out Issa Kaman robes that maybe Lesa Kaman doesn't apply to. But as he points out, it's not gonna work out so well with Shitazo, because the Chavis Das is the Nesivis. The Chavis Das and Nesivis writes that even for Lesa Kaman it doesn't work, while we just use the Nesivis as far to say that maybe by Lesa Kaman it could work. So that's same mechaber. So that's a shtickel of tzarachin. If you doesn't have to bother you, but if that's the kind of thing that bothers you, that's a shtickel of tzarachin. Yeah.
Couldn't you also
say if Kaman just means it's not no, but then the situation wouldn't even come up.
Why not?
Because you can't have Issa Kaman and Parish and Kavua in the same place.
So why can't you just have Kavua and Lesa Kaman?
Because we know that there's a din that Kavua overwhelms Rove. So what type of Rove is it overwhelming? It can't be overwhelming. If you're saying like the Shmaisa, it can't be overwhelming in Issa Kaman because they're mutually exclusive. So it must be the Rove that's overwhelming is the Lesa Kaman.
Oh, okay.
Right. Got it. Okay, so you keep things very simple. So Rav Asher writes, Shlita has a discussion about this in his Sefer Minchas Asher on Shmos in Parshas Mishpatim. And he doesn't like all the, he knows that the Achronim will have this whole discussion that we've mentioned till now. And he's not so excited about it. And he goes for a much simpler definition, as we'll see in a second. And he says, first of all, there is a general trend in Achronim to assume that Lesa Kaman basically is a birur. It basically tells you what the facts are. Because of this Svara idea that the Achronim talk about, that there's a Svara that it's true. So therefore, maybe there's a real functional difference between an Issa Kaman and Lesa Kaman. That an Issa Kaman basically is a din hanhaga telling you how to behave. even though there's still a strong logic to say it may not be true. But, you know, again, let's get to back, go back to the example of 16 kids from Teaneck or the kids studying. Right, so when I'm dealing with if I take a student and say he's from Teaneck because of Rove, there's a very strong chance that's not true. 4 out of the 20 kids are not. So therefore, to say I know this kid is definitely from Teaneck when there's a strong possibility that he's not, so there's no svar to say that. I have not established that he's really from Teaneck. So therefore, it's only the halacha telling me I have the right to treat him as if he's from Teaneck because of the rov. But the rov that most kids study, so maybe I could believe because that's coming from a logical basis, not just because it's coming from the numbers. So then I could say that I've really established halachic truth that this kid studied. So that, there's a trend in Achronim to see the distinction like that. And Rav Asher Weiss writes, he's not so sold by that whole idea. Because as much as there's a svara to say this kid's not from Teaneck, as much as I have to think that there are 4 kids who aren't from Teaneck, and therefore there's a strong possibility that he's not, so Rubud Lassakman has the same thing going for it. The fact is, it's still possible he didn't study, it's still possible something came up, or he's unusual or whatever, and therefore that reality is just as compelling as the reality that there are 4 kids from somewhere else. So to say that Rubud Lassakman really tells you what the truth is, as opposed to Issakman, which just tells you how to act, he's not really sold on that distinction. He says that even though he knows the big Achronim have used different distinctions, he thinks the distinctions like this are very straightforward. That basically, an Issakman means that you have the right to assume this was part of the majority. You have the right to assume that this student is one of the 16 out of 20 from Teaneck. What does Lassakman mean? Lassakman means I don't have, basically, to put it very simply, Lassakman means you don't have to look for trouble. You have the right to assume that everything is proceeding the standard status quo. And you don't have to assume there's a deviation from the status quo. And that's basically the difference. But Issakman goes based on majority, and Lassakman goes based on the standard. And you maybe would have thought, well, maybe I have to assume that this is a deviation. Right, like take Rov Bios Achar Abal. So the normal pattern in the world will be that a person will be the child of his mother's husband. But it's possible that it's not the case, right? It's physically possible that that didn't happen. It's possible that she had an affair. You don't have to look for trouble. You don't have to look for different possibilities. You know, so a cow in its normal form will be a kosher cow. Maybe this cow is traced, but you're not mechuyev to look for trouble. That's basically what the chiddush of Rubud Lassakman means. You're not mechuyev to look for trouble. And he says, in order to categorize it, he says, so that's not called a birur, because you don't know it any more definitely than you do with an Issakman, but it is called vadai. That for the halachic purposes of vadai, as opposed to safek, and part of what prompted this whole discussion, is the basic question, when you're following the rove, so do we still use the word safek to describe that situation? Or do we say it's a vadai that it's whatever it is? So halachic purposes, that's called vadai. The right to assume standard status quo is called vadai. That's basically how he sets things up. It comes out the difference in that sense. Not the exact opposite, but right in the sense that I wouldn't say it's the exact opposite. He's saying in both cases, really, you don't have to worry about the miut. But the way it works is that in the Issakman you have a right to assume that this is not the meat was not the source of this item. And in the Lassakman they say you just don't have to assume there was a deviation. You don't have to assume that this is anything other than
so what do you call this a rabbi?
No.
And for the negator probably wouldn't call it a rabbi.
No. He would just tell you that the halacha tells you have a right to ignore the meat. So we'll basically stop with that. I'll just mention one thing, the premotion, the end of his essay, and again, a lot of the elements we'll discuss more next week. We'll talk about the Mammon and the Fashas. But he does mention that if you really look through things, you basically come out really with 3 categories. Really, it could be that there's Issakman, and there's Lassakman, and there's something in the middle. That when you're dealing straight with straight numbers, maybe that's going to be Issakman. And when you're dealing with the way the world works, this can be less a command. But then there's also things in the middle, and this may relate to the Chassam Sofer distinction, things that happen to be right now the way things happen, but it's not really tied into any reality and could change. And just a function of the way things are now, but could be affected by some type of sociological shift or some type of shift in the world. That's somewhere in the middle and may have different dinim, and that may affect some of our discussion we'll come to next week. Okay, so just to quickly recap what we spoke about. So we discussed the fact that the Gemara seems to tell us in the Chulin that there are two categories, Issachaman and Lesachaman, and they need two different sources, and the Gemara just gives us examples without defining it, that Issachaman is like the stores and like the Sanhedrin, and Lesachaman is like the assumption that a katan is not a sris. And it seems to be that Issachaman seems to be favored in the Gemara. The Gemara has a havmina that Reb Meir even agrees to, the Rabbanan agree to Reb Meir when it comes to Issachaman, and Rishonim seem to say that Reb Meir agrees to Chamim Issachaman. There are indications that Issachaman is stronger. So what are the definitions? On the one hand, you could say it's the question if the information is in front of us or not in front of us, that's the way the Amir Or says, or you could say, like Reb Chanan, it's a question, do we look at every prat by itself, or do we look at the klal and then try to understand the prat from within the klal? Or similarly, the way Nevi Achronim say, so the one hand, the Shmaisa says that it's basically a question of, well, we're looking at some a din of Kol Deparish and Ruba Deparish, or we're looking at something that's based on a Svara. And the Nesivis has a slightly different spin on it, that the question is, are we adding up the parts, or are we just looking at this one thing by itself? And the Chassam Sofer seems to follow along a similar path. And then it could be suggested that maybe it's not that Issachaman is bad, Issachaman just they're operating on two completely different systems, so they need two different makaras. And Issachaman is a din that you're allowed to assume this was Parish Meharov, while Issachaman is possibly a din Birer, and we'll discuss more later, that that this is like the Rov. And I mentioned there, Rebbe Eger in his Tshuva system in Kavav, says that when it comes to Issachaman, so the Miyat is as if it's nothing, you can't use it for a Miyat or for anything like that, as opposed to Lassachaman, and the Prima Rosh explained that based on the Yosef Engel and the Beis Ha'otsu, that since in Issachaman you're worried about the other parts, so therefore by definition the din is telling you to ignore those other parts, and therefore it's nothing, while when it comes to Lassachaman, the other parts are always there, it's just not what we're following, based on the Halacha on. And Meir Simcha's discussion that the strength of Issachaman has to do with the fact of Batul Barov, that we see all these elements of together as one big part, and therefore the heter is mevatel yisur, or whatever the relevant terminology is, while that's not applicable by Issachaman. And the Prima Rosh pointed out that there was an afkamina between the Shmaisa and the Nesivis, that according to the Shmaisa, so everything is based on Prisha, while according to the Nesivis is based on adding up the parts. This could affect the Sveik Sveika question. Sveik Sveika, if you assume like the Rajba, the Sveik Sveika is Midin Rov, so then the question is, what type of robe is it, Issachaman or Issachaman? So according to the Nesivis, it's an Issachaman because you're counting up the different studs to the Nekel. And according to the Shmaisa, maybe that's a Issachaman because we're not dealing with Parish. And this could also affect the question of Kavua. Kavua, we know, means you don't worry about, you don't take into account the robe. But does that mean only Ruba the Issachaman or also a Issachaman, which could be a Machlokas Achronim? And that could be related to the difference between the Nesivis and the Shmaisa, because if you want to say that it's all about Parish like the Shmaisa, so then Kavua by definition is not Issachaman, must be talking about a Issachaman situation, and therefore must be telling you they don't even follow it as Issachaman, while the Nesivis could possibly say that Issachaman is not part of the story, and that Kavua only cancels out an Issachaman, but not Issachaman. But the problem is you have to then work out how the Nesivis stems with what he says in the Chavis Das, and the Shmaisa and others give you the impression that Issachaman is basically a din hanhaga, tells you how to behave, while Issachaman is really a birur, tells you what the reality is. And I mentioned that Rav Asher Weiss in his sefer doesn't really buy that, that basically at the end of the day, the svara to say that Issachaman is not really telling you the absolute truth could be applied to Issachaman also. There's no greater svara to say that Issachaman is absolute truth than there is by Issachaman. And that really the distinction basically is that Issachaman has to do with the assumption that this is part of the majority number-wise, while Issachaman means you have the right to assume that things are standard and things aren't deviating from the norm. And lesser command is therefore not a birur, but it is vadai. For halakhic purposes, it does have a status of vadalus, and we wouldn't call such a situation a safek. And the Rishon ended off by mentioning that the promotion points out there probably are three categories at least, that there's an issa command, a lesser command, and something in the middle, which may make a difference in some shittas Rishonim. Okay, so that is Hashem next week, so we'll continue in topics of Rov, and we'll see how this applies to the Sugi V'Holcham Laman Acharov and the Fashtacharov, and how they interact with each other. Have a wonderful evening.